What you should all have in front of you is a blue handout that should say exam one. So again, at the end of the day, we'll hand you the answers for both exam one and exam two, which we'll go through today. So sit tight and you'll get those to take home with you that'll have the answers and the explanations on them. Make sure you find your little ARS punch key thing in front of you. Make sure at the end of the day that you leave it here. It'll be back here again for you tomorrow. Just try to remember not to take that when you sort of scoop up your stuff at the end of the day. If anyone has questions, these sheets in front of you, feel free to write your questions and we'll collect those. And after we finish exam one, we'll answer questions that came in from this morning. Are you set,
yes, okay. Colin?
You're good? Okay, so we'll start with question number one. A point source of technetium-99 is placed in front of a gamma camera. As the distance between the point source and the collimator is changed from 5 centimeters to 10 centimeters, which of the following will happen? The count rate will drop by 50%, the count rate will increase by 50%, the count rate remains unchanged, or the count rate increases and the image remains unchanged.
Okay, so C is the correct answer. Those of you who were maybe thinking inverse square law or maybe thinking something else that answered A, remember that as that distance increases, so too does the angle by which photons can strike the detector will increase. So the count rate remains largely unchanged as distance increases.
Okay, question two. For which radiopharmaceutical and activity would you recommend interruption of breastfeeding for the longest period of time? 3 millicuries of thallium chloride, 25 millicuries of cestamibi, 10 millicuries of tagged red blood cells for a MUGA-scan, or 10 millicuries of FDG?
And the correct answer is A, 3 millicuries of thallium chloride, and that's due to the long half-life of thallium. There's a good guide out there that you could easily find on the web called Nuclear Regulatory Guide 8.39, which does have the recommended breastfeeding cessation times for common isotopes.
Question number three. Sievert is a unit of exposure, equivalent dose rate, or activity. Is there a way to get the feedback to...
Answer there is B, equivalent dose. The SI unit for exposure is coulombs per kilogram, and the SI unit for activity is becquerel.
So number four, stochastic effects of ionizing radiation are those effects whose severity increases with dose, probability increases with dose, or is associated with threshold effect, or none of the above.
The correct answer is B, probability increases with dose. Someone chose the severity increases with dose and a threshold effect, and that's with deterministic effects, not stochastic.
Question five. Which of the following correctly identifies the system's spatial resolution of a gamma camera in relationship to the intrinsic resolution and the collimator resolution? I'll let you look at those formulas.
Thank you.
The correct answer is D, raising the value in parentheses to 0.5 power is taking the square root of it. So that's really just an expression of the same equation, just in a different mathematical form.
So that would be a typical permutation that you'll see of if knowing the formula and being able to manipulate it are the types of thing that you'll see on the exam. So be familiar with the formulas and the mathematical manipulations of them. Question 6. Spatial resolution will do what with increasing distance from a parallel whole collimator? Degrade, improve, remain unchanged, or improve initially, then degrade?
Correct answer is A. No comment.
So, good job. Question 7. A Geiger-Müller counter should be calibrated how often? Daily, weekly, monthly, or annually?
So don't confuse the fact that we do a daily source check every day, and that's very simple, just checking to see that the meter responds to radiation. The calibration is more in-depth, checking to see if it accurately responds to a source is an annual calibration. So the answer is D, annual.
Question number 8. If the estimated effective dose for a rest and stress cardiac spec study is 12 millisieverts, this can be explained to the subjects as how many times the yearly background exposure? 2 times, 4 times, 20 times, or 10 times?
And the correct answer is B, 4 times. Here, we're going with the lower side of the assumption of 300 to 400 millirem a year. The background equivalent radiation exposure term, or BERT, B-E-R-T, is a new term that's out there that's being used on exams, so just be familiar with multiples of background for exam questions. Pretty common now.
Question number 9. Which source of radiation dose to a technologist will result in greater probability of developing cancer? Accidental ingestion of 1 millicurie of technetium-99 resulting in a committed effective dose equivalent of 0.05 millisieverts, a whole body dose of 0.05 millisieverts received from proximity to an unshielded radioactive waste container, enough information is provided, or neither, the risk is the same.
The correct answer is D, neither. The risk is the same. Because we're in units of millisieverts, we've already taken into account the relative biological effectiveness, which is the risk. And since it's the same millisievert, the risk is the same.
Question number 10. Which of the following statements is correct? Gamma camera intrinsic resolution is 10 to 15 millimeters. Intrinsic uniformity is always greater than 10%. Energy resolution is generally in the range of 8 to 10%. Gamma cameras have an upper count rate limit of 20 KEPS.
The correct answer is C. Most of you got that right. For those of you who answered A, the intrinsic resolution is 10 to 15 millimeters. That would be a typical resolution of a collimator. So that would be an extrinsic resolution measurement, not intrinsic.
As Lindsay mentioned before, a great source is to go to the ASNIC website and download the guidelines. There'll be an RVG one, SPECT one. We really encourage you to do that. It's very concise. A lot of the things that we've gone over in the course will be there. A nice way to review before the exam. Question number 11. the most probable interaction of technetium-99m-140 keV photons in fatty tissue is Compton scatter, photoelectric absorption, pair production, complete transmission.
Correct answer is A, 71% of you got that right. So you remembered that probability distribution that I showed where the Z number, effective Z number of tissue, which is basically like water, basically the effective Z number of oxygen, the most prominent interaction with technetium is Compton scatter.
Make sure that you're familiar with that diagram that Lindsay showed you, okay? Which of the following is not a test performed on a dose calibrator? Accuracy, precision, constancy, or geometry?
Good. So the vast majority got that right. It is B, precision. Geometry is a test. Remember that that is the one where we measure the set amount of activity in various volumes. The other one that is missing off the list here is linearity. So linearity, accuracy, constancy, and geometry are the main dose calibrator tests.
Question 13, do you have a comment?
Precision is the correct answer. Accuracy,
Question 13. Records of radiation dose to personnel are maintained for 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, or indefinitely?
Most got that correct. Occupational exposure reports must be maintained indefinitely.
Question 14, which of the following emissions has the highest radiation weighting factor or quality factor? Alpha particles, gamma rays, beta particles, or neutrons?
Great job. Alpha particles have the highest LET in relative biological effectiveness, thus the highest quality factor.
Question 15, the attenuation of photons in matter is a function of energy and Z number, linear LET, photon energy and conversion electrons, or mode of decay?
Correct answer is A. B refers to the linear energy transfer, and this is a related but not exactly the same thing of how much energy along a path length any radiation will lose. It includes particulate radiations as well as photons. So the question is photon interactions in matter, so that's based upon the energy and Z number. Correct answer is A.
16. Electron capture is preferred mode of decay in nuclei that are proton rich, neutron rich, below Z number, or have high transition energy.
Okay, correct answer is A. Very good. Everybody got that right. It's a proton rich because a proton is converted to a neutron. Z number goes down by one in electron capture.
Okay, 17. Sorry. Positron decay occurs when the nucleus is proton rich, positron rich, heavy, or neutron rich.
Correct answer is A, proton-rich. Positron decay, remember, in positron decay, a proton is converted to a neutron. So we are going from a positron-rich parent to a more stable daughter with higher number of neutrons.
Question 18. Area surveys must be performed at the beginning of each working day, at the end of each working day, weekly or monthly.
Surveys must be performed at the end of each working day.
So for those of you who are recertifying, these are the kinds of things you just have to make sure you go through and memorize, because these are easily testable questions. So you know, this is a chance for you to kind of get those in your mind. Question 19, high count, extrinsic flood field uniformity corrections should be acquired in a 64 by 64 matrix for at least 3 million counts daily or for each set of collimators.
All right, answers are all across the board. So the correct answer is D, for each set of collimators. Where this becomes a little confusing is don't confuse the daily uniformity flood with the high count flood corrections. The high flood count corrections are acquired for at least 30 million counts. These are the ones that, you know, that often are done for 100 million counts. So these are the acquisitions that can take several hours, actually. And they're always acquired in the 256 by 256 matrix and usually done on a quarterly basis. So these high count corrections, remember, this is to correct for the differences in sensitivity across the field of view that are applied to SPECT acquisitions, and they should be performed for each set of collimators. Now, in nuclear cardiology, in most cases, we're all just using high-resolution collimators all of the time. So, but if it is a general nuclear medicine setting where other collimators are used, they should be performed for each set of collimators used on the system.
Okay, question 20. Radioactive packages must be monitored within what period following delivery? Immediately, within 1 working hour, 2 working hours, or 3 working hours?
That's correct. Within 3 working hours.
So question 21. What would be the proper DOT label for a radioactive package within 0.2 millirems per hour on a surface and a reading of background at a distance of a meter? No labels necessary, 1, 2, or 3.
And because it's less than 0.5 mR per hour, it would get a radioactive label 1. If you would be giving activity inside the package and an answer was accepted package limited quantity, that would be something to consider also, but they'll have to give you more information for an accepted package limited quantity.
Question 22. The maximum occupational exposure per year to a nuclear medicine technologist is 5 rems a year for the whole body, 5 rems for the lens of the eye, to the testes, or to the hand per year?
Okay.
Excellent. 23, a photon undergoing photoelectric absorption in tissue produces annihilation photons, no secondary radiations, electrons and characteristic X-rays, gamma photons of lower energy than the primary photon.
The correct answer is C. Most of you got that. Those of you who chose option D, remember the fundamental characteristic of photoelectric absorption is that the photon is completely absorbed. So any implication that there's some photon degradation of energy, not applicable. That energy is completely converted from electromagnetic radiation to kinetic energy of the photoelectron. Correct answer is C.
Question 24. The energy of a photon that undergoes photoelectric absorption undergoes partial energy degradation, is exactly the same as the photoelectron, becomes an X-ray or is converted to kinetic energy of an electron?
Oh, good. You listened to me before. So, yes, correct answer is D.
25. The difference in response to a major spill versus a minor spill is reporting to the RSO, containing, cleanup, or all of the above.
Yeah, that's a tricky question. And the answer is cleanup. And that's because in major and minor spills, you are reporting to the RSO, you are containing the spill, but in a major spill, you may not clean it up so quickly. You may want to lock off the area and approach it through decay or something like that.
So in fact, you don't want to clean it up. You want to contact the RSO and then make sure whether or not you're going to clean it up.
The containing in the question was really more for the prevention of contamination. Throw the chuck over it. It's a bad question.
Okay, question 26. A nuclear medicine technologist is obviously pregnant, but has not formally declared her pregnancy. By law, her occupational whole body dose limit is 50 rem a year, 5 rem a year, half a rem until she delivers, 0.05 rem until she delivers.
All right, almost half, got it. Because she didn't declare her pregnancy, we have to keep her to the occupational dose limit of 5 rem per year.
So question 27. Emissions from technetium-99m are monoenergetic, mainly electrons, photons and electrons, or pure gamma photons?
Correct answer is C. Most of you got that. I know that the 42% of you who chose option D, it's an easy thing to do because the photon yield in the de-excitation of technetium-99m is 87% efficient in producing photons, but it's also 13% producing internal conversion electrons. And we tend to think about it as basically a pure gamma emitter, but there are electrons that are produced always with technetium-99m. So answer is C, photons and electrons.
The mode of decay of molybdenum to technetium is beta, beta and gamma, isomeric transition, or internal conversion.
Okay, the correct answer is B. Most of you got that. The isomeric transition is the mode of de-excitation that's associated with the metastable state of technetium-99m to technetium-99. And beta minus decay does not completely resolve the transition energy of the molybdenum, the subsequent isomeric transition of technetium-99m more fully resolves that transition energy. So it's a combination beta minus gamma decay for molybdenum.
So question 29. The half-value thickness for technetium-99 photons in tissues is less than that of thallium, about the same as water, greater than lead, or decreases with a decrease in Z number.
So the correct answer for that is B, and that is the tissue is essentially, from a Z number perspective, same as water. Obviously, the half-value thickness A could be true because the energy of thallium is less, and presumably then the half-value thicknesses would be less. So those of you who chose A, you probably have an arguable position there. But the best answer is B.
Question 30. Daily uniformity tests should require at least how many counts? 500,000, 1 million, 3 million, or 10 million?
Good.
Let me just make a comment. I don't think any of us have really stressed this, but it may be something useful for you to remember for the board exam. The daily QC is basically testing those system corrections that I talked about, energy correction, linearity correction, and uniformity correction. So the statistical nature of the images that you use to test those in quality control can be lower. You're just testing to see if something is working. Now, Robert pointed out wisely in his talk that you can do this high density flood imaging for uniformity, and you use that image that has much more statistics into the 30 million count range to actually recalibrate the correction table. That's a different thing from just doing QC to make sure that the correction map is working. So anytime you're looking at statistics that are, let's say, below 5 million counts, chances are you're talking about a quality assurance. If you're looking at things that questions that have very high count rate numbers, like 10 million, 20 million, 30 million counts in them, you are probably recalibrating something and because you need more statistical validity to your procedure in that case.
Okay, question 31. The inverse square law is associated with which factor of radiation exposure? Time, distance, shielding, or all of the above? Do you want to just say why it's not all of the above?
The inverse square law is, as you double your distance, it's a factor of x squared, so it's a pure distance formula.
In the question 32, in the decay of the metastable state of technetium nucleus, equal numbers of electron and photons are created, more photons than electrons are created, only photons are created, or the Z number decreases by one.
And the correct answer is B. Most of you got that correct. Just remember that we have photons and electrons produced in that isomeric transition, albeit more photons than electrons, we still have both.
Okay, question 33. The decay factor differs from the decay constant in that the decay factor is the average rate of decay for all radionuclides. The decay factor refers to the average rate of decay for a specific radioisotope. They're the same thing, just a different term. The decay constant is an average rate of decay, and the decay factor is specific to elapsed time.
Very good. Answer, correct answer is D. The difference is one is an average, decay constant is average, and decay factor is specific to elapsed time.
Question 34. Which of the following is not an advantage of aluminum oxide over other methods of personal monitoring devices? Reading can be repeated multiple times, it's not affected by heat, precise measurements, or can detect alpha particles.
Okay, even without knowing if aluminum oxide or the Luxel betas can detect alphas or not, the reason we like the Luxil so much is because of A, B, and C. We can repeat the readings on them. Once you use it, you can reuse them. They're not affected by heat, and they are precise. So the correct answer is D.
Okay, question 35. The majority of background exposure to radiation is from medical radiation procedures, natural radiation sources, consumer products, or other sources. Excellent.
All right, B is correct. And in the natural radiation source exposure to background, radon is the highest offender.
Okay, question 36. The average rate of decay of a radionuclide is expressed by which of the following? Go ahead and look at those four formulas and choose.
So the correct answer is B. Remember that the decay constant, the variable that stands for decay constant, is lambda. Okay, so that is the that symbol for that variable. Now, on the board exam, remember you can't use a calculator. So for you to solve an equation such as C or D, or A for that matter, which is actually referring to linear attenuation coefficient, it would be an unreasonable thing for you to do without a calculator. So it's critical that you remember what all those variables are in like the decay equation that's listed in D. And in general, if you memorize those variables, any permutation of a question on those you could answer. So remember that lambda, it's just simply an equivalency. Lambda is the variable for the decay constant.
Okay, question 37. The decay factor of a radionuclide is expressed by which of the following? Again, look at those four formulas.
I'm sure you'll all get this one right this time. Very good. The correct answer is C. You've now entered time into your variable with T. So that implies a specific elapsed time, which is what the definition of the decay factor is.
Okay, question 38. You're exercising someone on the treadmill and spill 15% of the dose of technetium on the treadmill. You should notify the RSO, report a medical event to the NRC, inform the patient's physician of a misadministration, or repeat the test with 4 millicurie dose of thallium.
That's correct. The answer is A, notify the RSO, because the spill has occurred.
Do you want to just remind people how much misadministration would be?
Misadministrations are reported to the NRC or the Department of Health when the dose to the whole body exceeds 5 rem or a dose to a critical organ exceeds 50 rads. And you would not want to repeat the test with 4 millicuries of thallium, especially following a technetium study. You'd have a very bad thallium image.
Okay, question 39. Which is the most effective way to reduce your occupational exposure from technetium? Use gloves, decrease your time handling the radioactivity by 10%, use tongs to handle the dose and step away from the patient once the dose is administered, or wear leaded eye protection?
And the correct answer is C. The best way to reduce your radiation exposure from those choices would be remote handling techniques and increasing distance from the patient. Using of gloves will just prevent contamination. It won't reduce your exposure. And leaded eye protection will not afford you whole body protection.
Question 40. The half-life of cobalt-57, 72 hours, 270 days, 27 months, or 27 years?
270 days is correct. Where the 27 years could be coming from is the cesium-137 has a 30-year half-life. So the cobalt-57 is the one that we use with the sheet sources for the daily uniformity floods and also for dose calibrator testing sources, but 270 days.
Question 41. The half-life of a radionuclide can be calculated using the following. Take a look at those four formulas.
Okay, the correct answer is D. Most of you got that one correct. So those of you who answered B, that predicts an amount of activity after time T, but not necessarily specific to half-life. Half-life is equal to natural log of 2, which is 0.693, divided by the decay constant.
Okay, question 42. Low-energy electrons are ejected when light strikes the anode, the photocathode, the sodium iodine crystal, or the dynode array.
Okay, the correct answer is B. I can see why that might be a bit of a challenge. We didn't specifically talk about the components of a photomultiplier tube, but remember that the job of the photomultiplier tube is to convert those flashes of light from the scintillation crystal to electrons. And the way that happens is those photons of light strike that flat surface of the photomultiplier tube, and they knock electrons off, and that stream of electron then goes down the tube and is amplified through the dynodes and becomes a voltage pulse that you analyze. So since that end of the photomultiplier tube is what's exposed to light, it's called photo, and since it produces electron, it is a cathode, so it would be the photocathode surface, or the photocathode end of the photomultiplier tube.
Okay, question 43. The failure of a PMT in a scintillation camera would create an unusually high count rate in an MPI, overcorrection from the energy correction software, a cold spot in the uniformity field, or no effect if the PHA is correctly calibrated.
No comment.
The
correct answer is C, and I think you saw plenty of examples where malfunctioning.
Make sure before the exam you just look at those examples, because those are the type of things that they'll show you a picture. One of the things that the boards really want you to do is you're the ones who are reading. They want you to understand if you're seeing something wrong with the image, how did it get there? How can you go back and figure out what happened? So when Lindsay talked about having artifacts, and when you hear Dr. DePuy this afternoon talk about artifacts, why they're created, they want you to recognize that. So yes, you need to be able to read images, but you need to understand when something's wrong and know where and why that happened along the way. So as you're sort of thinking through these things, think about how does that affect my image? What does that look like? And that'll sort of help you think through some of the questions. Question 44. A radioactive source produces 90 millirems an hour at a distance of 1 meter from the source. What is the measured exposure at a distance of 3 meters? 10 millirems an hour, 45 millirems an hour, 15 millirems an hour, or 30 millirems an hour?
And that's correct. A, 10 millirem per hour, although the answer was none of the above because we shouldn't use units of Rankins, not rems. But the way we solve that is using the inverse square law, which would be 90 divided by 3 squared.
Question 45. Electron emissions from technetium-99 are non-existent, create high-level tissue damage, or due to internal conversion or result of electron capture.
And the correct answer is C. Those of you who answered D, electron capture is a mode of decay that results from a proton-rich parent decaying to a more neutron-rich daughter. The emissions from technetium-99m, remember, are isomeric transitions or internal conversions, which do not change the architecture of the nucleus. The only thing that changes in de-excitations from metastable states are the energy levels, not the number of protons or neutrons.
Okay, question 46. The determining characteristic between stable and unstable nucleus is the number of protons, the proton-to-neutron ratio, vacancies in the K-shell, or the number of neutrons.
Very good. Correct answer is B. Those of you who answered C, we're talking there about electrons, and electron status does not contribute to the state of stability or instability in the nucleus.
Question 47. What is the shallow or extremity dose annual occupational limit? 0.5 sieverts, 0.15 sieverts, 0.05 sieverts, or 1.5 sieverts?
And the answer there is A, 0.5 sieverts. Again, you may be responsible for sieverts or REMS.
Question 48. The largest source of background radiation is from thorium, radon, cosmic rays, or consumer products. Okay, we should get 100% on this.
Oh. Radon accounts for more than 50% of the natural background radiation.
Okay, question 49. Which of the following statements about PET is correct? Positrons are detected by the PET scanner. The energy window is centered at 1.02 MeVs. Coincidence detection is at 180 degrees is required, or electrons with energy 511 keV are detected.
Correct answer is C, coincidence detection at 180 degrees is required, because what you are detecting, for those of you who answered D, are not the electrons that you're detecting, but the resulting annihilation photons at 511 keV. So D would be excluded because we're not detecting electrons, we are detecting annihilation photons, the result of converting the masses of electrons to electromagnetic radiation.
Question 50. Positron imaging systems do not use sodium iodine crystals because of the low light yield at 511 keV, high linear attenuation coefficient at 511 keV, the expense, or its low stopping power at 511 keV.
And the correct answer is D. The Z number for sodium iodide is low, and relative to 511 keV of annihilation photons, so there's a very high probability that they will go right through the crystal. Those of you who answered A, you've got an argument there. There would be less light yield from a sodium iodide crystal when interacted with a 511 keV photon because of this high probability of transmission through that source. So it's a reasonable answer. The best answer is D, the low stopping power due to the low Z number of sodium iodide.
Okay, question 51. Among the listed organs, the most radiosensitive organ is skin, red marrow, gonads, or breast?
Yeah.
Yeah, this one is going back to your radiation biology years, and amongst those listed, the tissue weighting factor is highest for breast tissue. And breast is the highest radiosensitive organ there.
Question 52, a linearity test on a dose calibrator is performed to assess the ability to read both high and low activity, assess the ability to read both high and low volumes, assess the accuracy of readings compared to a known standard, or all of the above.
Yes, so answer A is correct. It's high and low activity. This is the test where we have several millicuries in a very small volume, and we keep adding saline and testing. Linearity. I'm sorry, I'm going to confuse you more. Linearity is the one that we test the range of high and low activity. So A is correct, but that's the one where we either do the decay, the long three-day test where we're allowing a high amount of activity to decay down to very low levels, or we put those sheets of lead basically over top the source to simulate the decay. So different tests will evaluate those other things. High and low volumes is the geometry test, and accuracy of readings is the accuracy test.
Okay, question 53. Offsetting the PHA window to the high energy side of the photopeak does which of the following? Improves resolution but degrades uniformity, improves resolution and sensitivity, improves uniformity but degrades resolution, has no effect on resolution, sensitivity, or uniformity.
Okay, tricky question, and the distribution shows that. The correct answer is A. Now, if we move the pulse height analysis window to the higher energy side of the energy spectrum, you're moving it away from the Compton scatter area. And theoretically, that would improve your spatial resolution because you're moving away from Compton scatter. It would degrade the uniformity, however, because remember that we have this intrinsic splay or variation of the placement of the photopeaks in that energy window as you go from photopeak to photopeak. That's what energy correction attempts to do, to line them up perfectly on a center line of the energy window. That's not a perfect process. It improves it somewhat. So if you start shifting that window around so that it's asymmetrically centered around the photopeak, you will exaggerate any differences in the performance of individual photomultiplier tubes. So you would be degrading uniformity. Now, those of you who chose B, improved resolution and sensitivity, never going to happen. Resolution, no matter what you do, whether it's in collimation or in spectroscopy, anything that you do to improve resolution degrades sensitivity because it's a filter of photons, and therefore you will get less photons, and therefore you will see less photons per unit of activity, which is the definition of sensitivity. For C, improves uniformity but degrades resolution, well, that's just the opposite of A, and I've already explained that. D, has no effect on resolution, sensitivity, or uniformity. So the placement of the pulse height analysis window, which essentially calibrates the camera for the photopeak of the radionuclide you're imaging, is the most fundamental definer of what your resolution and sensitivity is. It is the single most important instrument calibrator of those attributes. So that would not be true. So the correct answer is A. Tricky question, but you want to think of what the spectrum shows you. It shows you a photopeak of those photons which have undergone photoelectric absorption, and it shows you the distribution of Compton scattered photons for that particular detector at that particular energy relationship. So it is that spectrum that we use to calibrate an instrument's pulse height analysis window.
Okay, question 54. The differences in the radiations from thallium and technetium are due to mode of decay, abundances of gamma photon, the Z number, or internal conversion. Okay, what I have on my thing is different than what you guys. Do you guys have what's up on the board? Do you guys, and your thing, is it up, what's up there? I'm reading off of your handout that you're going to get that has the answers in it. All right, so those were the answers. All right, so here are the answers for this. Listen to them. So the differences in the radiation from thallium and technetium are due to mode of decay, abundances of gamma photon, the Z number, or internal conversion. So you have to remember those and then vote.
E.
Okay, so that would be a challenge. You're going to have to remember what the correct answers are. But it is the mode of decay that always determines the type and characteristics of the emissions. So we know that thallium, the emissions that you image, are the characteristic X-rays resulting from the capture through electron capture of that electron. So what we measure are the characteristic X-rays, which are the result of the cascading down of the electrons. So you have multiple energies of characteristic X-rays in thallium-201, as opposed to the isomeric transition of technetium-99m, which results in the emission of 140 keV photon and internal conversion electrons. So, unfortunately, we just get the same set of answers on this question.
Okay, question 55. Okay, this one's right. Collimators that produce low percentage full width half mass value for 140 keV energy point sources at 10 centimeters as compared to 2 centimeters from the collimator face are preferred for SPECT imaging, don't exist, can only be used in planar imaging, have the best resolution at the collimator face.
Okay, so the correct answer for this is B. And this question is asking two things. Your understanding of the optics of a collimator. Remember that the further away you are from a collimator with your source, the worse the resolution. If the resolution is a result of having the best possible energy conversions as expressed by a low full width half maximum value, it wouldn't be possible to have a lower full width half maximum value for a point source that's closer to the detector. So such a collimator doesn't exist. Answer is B.
Question 56. Spatial linearity and scintillation cameras are intrinsically very good, may be assessed differently and integrally, varies due to errors in PMTs, and is only considered in planar, not SPECT imaging.
Now, the correct answer on this is C. Remember that our big problem with resolving a linear array of activity is that we have a nonlinear response across the face of the photomultiplier tubes. That's what linearity correction does. So it is these variations in nonlinearity across the face of the photomultiplier tubes, as well as the variability in signals that come from photomultiplier tubes, that limit our ability to produce an image with good spatial linearity. So the correct answer is C.
Okay, question 57. It's a regulatory requirement that survey instruments are calibrated every 3 months, calibrated in units for contamination, checked weekly for battery functionality, or calibrated up to 1,000 millirem per hour with the radiation source.
The answer is actually D. There is an NRC regulation that says that GM meters must be calibrated and able to be calibrated accurately up to 1,000 millirem per hour. So there's different scales on the GM meters. You need to make sure that you've got a scale that can get up to 1,000 millirem per hour.
Okay, question 58. When a patient asks about the radiation dose from their nuclear cardiology exam, according to the professional radiation protection community, the most appropriate comparison for placing it into perspective it is by comparing their dose to radiation doses received by Japanese survivors, the annual radiation dose received by typical radiation workers at a nuclear power plant, the radiation dose received during a typical abdominal CT scan, the annual radiation dose they receive from natural sources in our environment.
And the correct answer is D. It's always nice to, when patients ask about risk or you're comparing doses, to try to equate it in terms of background. And the term, again, they use is the BERT, or the BERT, background equivalent radiation term. You may see that on an exam at some point. It'll be capital BERT.
Question 59. Bar phantoms are used to evaluate planar uniformity and resolution, planar linearity and resolution, SPECT uniformity and resolution, or SPECT linearity and resolution?
Okay, so bar phantoms are planar test, basically. With a bar phantom, we're looking at two things. One, what are the smallest spaces, the thinnest bars that we're able to discern? And also, are the lines straight? If you want to image these things for SPECT, those are things that we can do with the SPECT plexiglass phantom or JZAC phantom. But planar linearity and resolution is the weekly bar phantoms.
Okay, question 60. To accurately measure radiation exposure, the most appropriate instrument is the Geiger-Müller counter, dose calibrator, ionization chamber, or scintillation well chamber.
It's actually a very good question. When you want to accurately measure radiation exposure, although the Geiger counter is the most common device used in the nuclear medicine lab for doing area surveys, due to the physics of the GM meter, it's a super sensitive piece of equipment and very inaccurate, especially at lower energies such as technetium. They're calibrated for cesium at 60-62 keV, and due to the avalanche effect at 140 keV, it actually over-exaggerates the exposure. So an ionization chamber is the most accurate way to assess radiation exposure. It's a trick question.
Question 61. ALARA stands for Allowable Limit of Activity and Radiation Absorption, Allowable Radiation Action, as low as reasonably achievable, or as long as the radiation exposure allows. My personal favorite. D is my personal. All that 1% of people just made me happy, because that one's my personal favorite, and as long as the radiation exposure lasts. Okay, so ALARA is C. 62, a tuning fork artifact is caused by a bad uniformity flood, bar phantom, center of rotation, or JZAC phantom.
Good.
Great. Question 63. Uniformity tests should be performed daily, weekly, monthly, or quarterly?
So uniformity tests are daily floods. It's the other name for them is daily floods, so it is a daily procedure.
Question 64, you're returning a strontium rubidium 82 generator to the manufacturer and the surface dose rate is 4.2 millirems per hour and is 0.8 millirems per hour at 1 meter. What radioactive label must be on the box? A white 1, yellow 2, yellow 3, or no label?
And the correct answer is B, yellow 2. DOT labels is becoming a hot topic as more and more facilities are having PET scanners. And you're returning germanium rods, you're returning strontium rubidium generators. There's a lot of regulations with returning these, and the FAA is starting to inspect facilities looking for training records for yellow 2s. Anyone returning yellow 2 has some training they have to meet. So the answer is yellow 2, and that's because the dose rate for yellow 2 is on the surface 0.5 to 50 millirem per hour.
Okay, 65. Which organ receives the highest dose from rubidium 82? Lower large intestine, bladder, ovaries, red marrow, or kidneys?
All right. We threw that question in there really as an eye-opener. It's important to go back and take a look at the package inserts for the common isotopes in nuclear cardiology scanning. The answer happens here to be the kidneys receives the highest dose, and you'll see that right on the package inserts. So when you're taking a look at those inserts, look for the highest dose, look for the whole body dose. Those are the common questions.
Tomorrow, Dr. Taillefer will go through all of radiopharmaceuticals, so you'll get a lot of that tomorrow.
And let me make one comment. Package inserts are online, so you can just Google package insert for thallium, for technetium cestamibi, or tetraphosmin, or for any radiopharmaceutical and get that package insert. It's a great study guide along with those guidelines for both QC and clinical procedures on asnic.org. So these are all things that you can easily get your hands on through the internet.
66. The half-value layer of lead for a positron emitter is 0.7 centimeters. If the dose rate measured outside of an unshielded storage cabinet is 100 millirems per hour, how much lead must be added to reduce it to less than 5 millirems per hour? 1.4 centimeters, 2 centimeters, 2.4, or 3.2 centimeters?
Okay, that was a tough little question to do in a short period of time, but it's a very realistic question. Here, all you have to take a look at is you're going from 100 mR per hour to 5 mR per hour. How many half-value layers do I have to go through? And if you did it real quick, it's just over 4 half-value layers, so you needed more than 2.8 centimeters. So the only answer there was 3.2, and happens to be the right answer.
Question 67, how often do beta and gamma emitting sealed sources need to be tested for leakage? 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, or 12 months?
This was a question that we had pulled off from the authorized user days. If you've taken the authorized user class, sealed sources have to be leak tested every 6 months, and they're inventoried every 3 months.
Question 68. A room in the nuclear medicine department is used to store radioactive sources. If a worker could receive 0.12 rems, or 1.2 millisieverts, in 1 hour at 30 centimeters from the storage container, what type of sign is needed on the door? Caution, radiation area. Caution, radioactive materials. Caution, high radiation area. Both A and B, and both B and C.
All right. This was a tough question, and you needed to know a little bit about the regulations for a posting. If you have a radioactive material storage, you need a radioactive material sign. And if you have something that could cause a dose rate of greater than 1 millisievert per hour at 30 centimeters, you need a high radiation area sign as well. So the answer was both B and C.
Let me make a quick comment here. I know some of this detail about signage and DOT labels and quality control and instrument calibration times may seem like a lot of detail because you don't do those and you're not even exposed to those likely in your training. As an authorized user, you were authorized to delegate those activities to someone under your supervision. However, if you're not compliant, it's not the person that actually does these things for you that gets written up or cited. It's you as the authorized user. So that's why there is some emphasis put on this on the board exam, and even in practice, why some of the familiarity with all this, the signage and these regulatory things is important to you, because you're in the line of fire when it comes to inspections and to regulatory compliance, not the person that you delegate that task to. Would you say that's a fair statement?
I would agree.
Okay, question 69. True or false, a medical misadministration of 20 millicuries of technetium-99 yields an effective dose of 1.1 rem to the patient, and the highest organ dose is 3.7 rads. The Department of Health must be notified by telephone but 24 hours of the occurrence. True or false?
The answer here is false. You only need to notify the Department of Health if a misadministration results in an effective whole body dose of greater than 5 rem or an organ dose greater than 50 rads.
Okay, question 70. The gestational dose limit to a pregnant occupational worker is 5 millisieverts, 50 millisieverts, 0.5 sieverts, or 0.15 sieverts.
And the answer here would be 500 millirem, but since we're in sieverts, it'd be 5 millisieverts.
Okay, question 71. Myocardial perfusion spec center rotation artifact can be mimicked by flood field non-uniformity, patient motion, ramp filter artifact, or breast attenuation artifact.
Correct.
So we have a couple of questions that we'll go through. We'll have Jason and Lindsay go through those for the next just probably 5 or 10 minutes.
Sure. Okay, we have some submitted questions. The first one I have here is, can you get center of rotation artifacts on PET systems? On PET systems, you have nothing that rotates. You have a ring of stationary detectors, so center of rotation is not an issue since nothing rotates. A second question associated with this is what causes a hurricane artifact, and this will become a little bit more apparent to you after you've heard Dr. DePuy's lectures on artifacts. And some of these names admittedly are sort of colloquialisms, but the hurricane sign or these wisps associated disassociation of a myocardial perfusion image are associated with motion artifacts. And that's simply a misregistration of pixels in those rotational images or the planar rotational images when they are back projected into a three-dimensional array. You want to just take turns?
Sure. We had a question here on radiological units, which I believe was in the first lecture. It's important to note that a becquerel is 2.7 times 10 to the minus 11th curies, and a megabecquerel is 27 microcuries. The question had written millicuries by accident. And that is correct. That is the That is a relationship. The concern or the thought was a becquerel or a megabecquerel 37 millicuries. It's just the opposite. One millicurie is 37 megabecquerels. So you just kind of got the terms backwards. But a becquerel is 2.7 times 10 to the minus 11th curies.
I've got a question here. Is there any benefit from combining LSO crystals with CZT detectors, presumably in some type of a hybrid PET instrument? Second part of the question, or do CZD detectors eliminate the need for any crystal? And I think approaching it that way is the way to do it. Completely different technologies. LSO, scintillation crystal, CZT is a semiconductor. A semiconductor is a direct detector. Radiation hits the detector, generates an electronic signal. In scintillation, it's always a secondary form of detection where the energy strikes the crystal, then that crystal has, the flash of light has to be converted through a secondary process through photomultiplier tubes into an electronic signal. So there is always an advantage over direct detection versus indirect detection, i.e. semiconductor detection over scintillation.
We had a question here. What's the best way to answer the following question? What is the risk, not specifically the dose, but the risk of a nuclear cardiology study? And that's a tough question. And the reason for that is the exposure or the dose from nuclear cardiology study is low enough that it does not reach the deterministic effects. So at that point, everything is stochastic or probabilistic. So now we're talking about theories of probability at low levels radiation. So the way we like to talk about risk of these studies is always talking about it in terms of background radiation exposure. And a nuclear cardiology study is about 4 to 5 years of background exposure. And that actually answered the another question we had as well. So it's tough to give an absolute risk because you're talking about probabilities of cancer induction. So definitely talk about in terms of background exposure. And the second half of that question was, how would differences in background radiation been found in areas, how would differences in background radiation be found result? If you've got higher radiation in one area than another, is there a different incidence of cancer? That is a very, very debatable question that, depending on who you ask, will give you a very different answer. Due to the low-level radiation, it's tough to differentiate what is causing the cancers. But could it be increased background radiation? You can argue that, and you can argue against it as well.
Next question is, what's the best collimator for a technetium-99m single-day rest stress protocol for SPECT imaging? Without a doubt, that would be the low-energy, high-resolution collimator. That's just right off of the imaging guidelines. The only caveat to that would be if you do dual isotope imaging, there is avenue in the guidelines for you to use a all-purpose collimator for the thallium resting segment of that study, switching a collimator to a high-resolution collimator for the technetium study. Very little to be gained in image sensitivity by doing that, and a lot to be lost by productivity in your laboratory because you're going to have to take the time to change out these collimators, which will not make your technologist particularly happy. And then the second part of this question is, can a gantry be replaced after 5 years? I'm not sure what the reasoning for this question is, but gantries, particularly the type, the design, do wear out. The bearings and the mechanical attributes of gantries do age because these detector heads, remember, are encased in lead, and they're quite heavy, and so things can happen to them. As to whether or not you would want to replace a gantry, it's probably not going to wear out before something in the detector head itself wears out. So you'll likely be replacing a gamma camera over simply redoing a gantry.
We had mentioned about patient instructions. Are there any sample instructions that I can share based on the wide variety? The thing to remember is, instructions to patients to reduce the radiation exposure to the people around them are required when that exposure can result in a dose of greater than 100 millirem to the general public.
Now, for technetium studies that we're doing, it's on upwards to 180 millicuries is the threshold of where you actually are required to give instructions. And since we're not injecting those levels, that's why you have such a wide variety of instructions, because there is no commonality at this point. What we advise to most people, and this is strictly the facility's choice, but the way I go about it is we tell the patients the dose to the people around you is minimal. However, to reduce that exposure even further, for the first 24 to 48 hours, try to maintain a distance from small children and pregnant women, such as sitting on separate couches and not sleeping in the same bed. But again, that's personal preference. Because you haven't reached the threshold where instructions are required, anything you give is based on the ALARA principle, and that's what you want to be thinking. If you've got a patient who wants to go a little overboard, that's great. If you've got someone who's going to panic on you the minute you say it, you may want to take a step back from that instruction.
The last question I have is, what matrix size is most commonly used in clinical practice? And I'm assuming that's for myocardial perfusion studies, and that is 64 by 64, although 128 by 128 is acceptable and is in the guidelines. If one mathematically calculates through something called a sampling theorem, the absolute best matrix for a typical field of view and a typical heart size, it comes out at a value that's sort of in between those at about 93 pixels. But no computer system sets up these matrices based upon anything other than a power of 2. So you'll see 16, 32, 64 values. So typically 64 by 64 matrix is used. Some people do use 128 by 128s, and that's acceptable in the guidelines. Second part of that question, and for the person who wrote it, is what creates a star artifact? We haven't really discussed that. That is an artifact that results from a computer algorithm that reconstructs tomographic images. So that will be discussed actually tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken, and you'll understand the star artifact after that, so we'll hold that question. You done?
I'm done.
I have one last one we'll do very quickly. If E equals MC squared, is the energy produced by beta decay is equal to the energy produced by beta minus decay, but it is not. Why? E equals MC squared refers to the mass energy conversion. Beta particles, and whether they be positrons or negatrons, represent the energy of the conversion of the excited parent de-exciting to the daughter. So even a beta particle, whether it's a positive or negative beta particle, still has a mass equivalency of 0.511 keV, but it also possesses kinetic energy based upon how fast it's moving. So that is the segment that's related to decay, whereas E equals MC squared is the pure mass to energy conversion equivalency.